This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Yes, we are talking cravings. Hello, I'm Pete Dillon, and it's a culinary journey today we're going on. We're going to start in Birragara, because on Monday night the Age Good Food Guide Awards were presented, and I have one of the winners sitting here in the studio in front of me. You've met him before. You're going to talk to him again. His name is Josh Pelham. He is from the Estelle in Northcote. But before we go local, we're going to travel out to regional Victoria, because the 2015 Restaurant of the Year was awarded to a good mate of ours. His name is Dan Hunter. He's formerly from the Royal Mail Hotel, and Bray is his restaurant. It is now his own. Sir, heartiest of congratulations to you.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks a lot.
That's all right. Do you know Josh?
Yeah, we've met before, absolutely.
Hi, Dan. Going? How are you? Hi, Pete. How's everyone going?
Yeah, good.
I understand that he actually follows you around the world to eat where you're cooking.
Oh, really? Not too far to travel now that he's back in Australia.
Yeah. Well, true, but Josh, tell Dan
that story. Our inspiration for travelling through Spain came after the first dining experience at Royal Mail with you.
Well, and
it was a month travel that we took through Spain, going north, south, east, west, and our final night in Spain was at the Muguritz.
Oh, cool.
So thank you for that.
Be nice to go back to that trip, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
Be nice. Hey, mate, are you stoked? The restaurant hasn't been open a very long time and you are the restaurant of the year. Is that a lot of pressure?
Yeah, stoke's an understatement. We're very, very happy, Pete. I mean, it's pressure comes from lots of places, you know. Pressures we put on ourselves, and, you know, so we did open the restaurant with the intention of being among the best, you know. I mean, we did hope to, to carry on at least my reputation with develops at Royal Mail and other places and try and sort of go to the next level. So, yeah, I mean, there's been a fairly significant personal investment and investment of time, and obviously a lot of the staff moved to the area and we've taken over a property and a property that's been sort of, meant a lot to a lot of people over many years when George and Di had the property. So, you know, that's got its pluses and minuses as well. But it's, to be 9 months old and to now be considered among the best in the country and particularly in the state, and, you know, it's fantastic for us.
And I'm sure richly deserved, mate. I know the intention and the consideration you put on every plate. Is it nice to be doing this for yourself and sort of not having to answer to others?
Yeah. I mean, look, I've been working and cooking for close to 20 years now, and I suppose sort of waiting for the right time to do the right business. And, you know, so, look, I said of the Food Guide Awards on Monday night in my speech that it took us over 3.5 years to find the right location, and we were looking, and I was probably unhappy for quite a while in the last couple of years at Royal Mail but not able to let that on to anyone, and obviously trying to stay focused and all those things, but we're really happy that we've ended up here. And pressure, of course there's pressure now. I mean, we've taken shitloads of bookings in the last few days, and there's currently a full service going on that I'm sitting 5 metres from, and, you know, so it's...
You're watching the dance unfold.
But that's why you're in business, you know what I mean? Like, you don't often open a business to shut it in 2 years, you know. Hopefully you open it to be full and to be busy and to be excited and exciting people and those things. So hopefully that's happening here at the moment.
What's been the biggest challenge going out on your own? As you say, you sort of probably were at the Royal Mail a couple of years longer than you actually wanted to be.
Yeah.
What's been the big challenge? Is it just filling somebody else's shoes in a restaurant that already existed, or?
Oh, I think that what we've got on our side is that obviously a reputation that we've been able to transfer, and so that's okay. And I mean, obviously, we're doing a very, very different sort of offering than what George and Di did for so long. You know what I mean? So that there has been you know, some of the old Sunnybrae customers sort of turn up and go, oh, you know, George did this and George did that. But, you know, generally throughout the course of the meal, they come around and go, oh, hang on a minute, this isn't that, but it's really good. And so that's been cool. But, you know, I mean, just locating the right spot. I mean, we did want to have land to grow food on. We did want to be, you know, always imagine that the restaurant would be on the edge of a town, not in the main street of a town, you know, to have that little bit of separation. And I guess, you know, that when you start to, you know, make your objectives, there's not many places like that, you know what I mean? So we did take a long time to find the right spot, but as I said, we're really happy that a lot of those things that we looked at for 3 years, and we did look at, like, a lot of places, we're probably pretty happy that none of those were appropriate at the time, because we really feel as though this is a really great region to be in. I mean, you know, Melbourne is quite close compared to what it was in the past. Like, I mean, you know, it's 90 minutes from pretty much the city to the front door. There's two lanes going the whole way to sort of 10 kilometres away, Lawn to Apollo Bays, all under an hour.
Geelong, we actually waved on our way down there last week as we drove past. I mean?
It's really accessible. And I don't think we probably gave the Ocean Road the credit that it's due. But, you know, I mean, it's still the most touristed place in Victoria. So internationally, you're already on the radar. And just having that, you know, Bowen Heads to Apollo Bay, that's all under 1 hour to us, so it's nothing, you know. So it's really great.
Dan, I just got a quick question for you. With the gardens that you use to supply your restaurant, how are you finding that? Is it coming along well? Because I know that the gardens program that you had at Royal Mail was, you know, quite large.
Yeah,
And now you've got to start again, I guess, from the ground up, which could be a really great thing, but also really tough.
Yeah, I mean, it has been challenging because obviously we don't have the staffing that we had at Royal Mail, nor the financial backing behind it. You know what I mean? So obviously doing everything from sort of grassroots at the moment. We haven't had anyone full time for this first, you know, we've been open the next 9-10 months now, and we haven't had anyone working full time. We have had someone working sort of 6 hours a day, 2 days a week on our days off.
And that's the thing, it is a full time job after your own garden, especially when you're almost semi self sufficient.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's funny because there's been a garden here for a long time. Obviously, George had a garden.
Asparagus.
Here.
Your asparagus looks great. There's just a tweet popped up from your restaurant, and we're both admiring your asparagus.
So we're in the process of sort of, I guess, moving things that were here to more appropriate places, and I guess changing a few of the things. I mean, there's a garden in front of the house where you drive in.
Yep.
It looks lovely, but it has been harvested fairly, you know, cultivated fairly heavily for a long time. It's on a bit of a muddy slope. A lot of water runs into it. Obviously, the Otways gets a lot of rainfall, so we've turned that into an orchard. We've just planted, just at the start of, you know, in the middle of autumn, planted about 140 new fruit trees to make a new orchard there, and we've just slowly started moving into another part of the property and putting a new garden in, something that's sort of more appropriate for us, larger scale, longer beds, wider beds, easy to plant, easy to harvest, that sort of thing. You know, can drive in with a ute and do that sort of stuff. So we hope to have that fully up and running by the start of summer. And then obviously wait the next couple of years for those trees to develop and become an orchard. And I mean, I think that we'd still lovely to drive in and have, you know,
absolutely. That's one of the great memories I have. I came, I think, in about February or March, and I remember just driving and think, wow, this is really somewhere, going to be somewhere really special.
Indeed. Dan, another question, I suppose, and probably slightly, maybe just a little bit tongue in cheek. You put Dunkeld on the map. In a number of ways from a culinary perspective, and I'm assuming the same is going to happen with Birragara. And we've actually seen the rise of incredibly good regional restaurants over the last few years, certainly as restaurants of the year. Can you put your finger on why that might be, or is that too hard?
Oh, look, I think it's a funny time. Obviously, Melbourne in general in the last sort of 15 years has increased population massively. So there's obviously a greater market for that to happen. More and more people, I guess, you know, when you talk about Gen X now being sort of in their 40s, moving out of the inner city because it's become too expensive,
yes.
and looking for a probably slightly alternative lifestyle, or a cheaper lifestyle, or a more wholesome lifestyle, any of those three, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So I think more people are certainly willing to travel that 1 to 2.5 to 3 hours to get out of the city for a night, for a couple of nights. And I think, obviously, internationally speaking, food tourism has gone through the roof in the last couple of years. I mean, you only have to look at the economy of Denmark in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I think on a global level, that's sort of happening a little bit anyway. But in Australia, Victoria, because it's not happening everywhere. I mean, Victoria is really where it's happening. And I think the size of Victoria is really appropriate. I mean, we have many different climates, seasons, you know, regions all within a small state, which, you know, you could sort of liken, I guess, you know, Victoria to like a small European country in some sense. So we have, you know, we have coast, which is accessible to mountains in the same day. We have wine regions that are very different to each other, but all accessible to each other within one day, you know what I mean? So, and I think as a result with, you know, people turning to, I guess, more holistic food production as well, there's been more of a connection between restaurants and suppliers in the last 10 years as well, you know? I mean, I remember starting in Melbourne and really not seeing a connection between growers and restaurants, whereas now there's, you know, you have growers growing for restaurants.
I agree with you with that.
You know, so that's been like a really major breakthrough, and I'm not sure if, you know, I think chefs have had a lot to do with driving that, you know what I mean? I think, you know, we do talk a lot about producers, and fair enough, but I think, you know, the best produce in the world doesn't go anywhere unless someone's using it, you know? So I think a lot of chefs have been getting involved, a lot of people like Josh as well, you know, working overseas in Europe in the last sort of 10 or so years and coming back, and not just England, in other countries, and seeing that sort of, that regional aspect to cooking. And I mean, for me personally, I mean, I find it's very appropriate to be cooking this style of food where it grows, you know what I mean? So for me, I find it easier to produce dishes if I work close to the growth. So
and you can really use that sustainability term with some integrity.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, I think a number of things. I know I didn't probably answer the question outright then, but I think there's been a lot of things happening in Australian culture in the last couple of years. And it's and then, of course, just having restaurants, you know, like the Lake House, hanging around for 35 years, just year after year after year, it makes it seem like, okay, it can happen, you know. And then, obviously, what we did at Royal Mail was probably pretty unusual for the time, and it was 7 years ago when I went there now. And for that 7 years, it was probably pretty prolific restaurant. And so I guess having something so far out of the city made it seem like, for other people starting, on, hang on a minute, maybe you can do
something.
Well,
if they can do it, I can do it.
Yeah, in a way, you know, so.
Well, mate, look, it's always good to talk to you, and I'm very grateful for your time.
Thanks, Pete.
As you say, you've got a service and a merry dance happening around you, so we'll let you get back to it.
Thanks, mate.
Congratulations on the win, well deserved.
Thanks very much.
Congratulations, Dan.
Thanks, Josh, mate. Thanks, mate.
I hope it goes well. Cheers.
All right, catch up with you.
That's Dan Hunter. Bye. He is from Bray in Birragara, the 2015 Restaurant of the Year. I believe also Victoria's most expensive restaurant, but we won't talk about that.
Joy 94.9.
And in the studio, who I didn't really introduce before we started talking to Dan Hunter, he is from the Estelle in Northcote. His name is Joshua Pelham. And along with Timothy from The European, he is the 2015 Young Chef of the Year. Congratulations to you.
Thank you very much, P.
And congratulations to you, Tim.
Thank you.
Obviously, a really good kickstart, I suppose, if I can use that word, for your career. I just want to run through sort of the last 10 years and just roll off some names of people who have won this award.
Absolutely.
So Daniel Wilson and Emma McKay in 2003. George Kalambaras, you may have heard of him. Robin Wickens, who is now the chef at the Royal Mail Hotel in Dunkeld. Dallas Cuddy, who's working internationally. Adam De Silva, restaurateur at Coda and Tonka. Justin Wise, who's been at The Point and is now elsewhere. Nick Pollard, who's a restaurateur and who is now at Brooks. Michael Fox, Josh Murphy, who is at Moon Underwater. Mark Briggs, this is a fairly esteemed field, gentlemen. Congratulations for being selected amongst your peers to receive this award.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Tim, I'm going to start with you because you're on the phone, so I can point to Josh where you can't see me. What do you think? What's it mean to you? What's the crux of this for you?
It's obviously very good to... it was shocking at first, to be honest, but it's very good to see all the hard work you've done up to this point. It's good recognition of that, but also to sort of catapult you into the future. So I see it as not the hard work is finished, the hard work has just started sort of now to make use of this and to go into the future and all my future pursuits.
What do you want? What does that future look like? Have you got a bit of a roadmap?
there's no roadmap really. It's just sort of continue on the path with the European. Now we're quite busy, but we also do things outside of work. Like we've got consultancy gigs and things like that. So it's continuing on the path. Obviously, a restaurant would be nice in the future, but yeah, I'm a realist and I know there's a lot of money that I don't have at the moment.
You need a backer, mate. That's what you need. You need a very wealthy person that doesn't know anything about restaurants.
Yeah.
And you've got a fairly good mentor, I would suggest.
Ian Curley?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's very good. He's got a great knowledge of the industry and stuff like that. So sort of he's been good since then to sort of keep you grounded and take you into sort of the steps and where you want to go. So it's been very helpful so far because it's all a bit new and it's a bit sort of been full on for the last week.
Excellent. Josh, would you agree with what Tim's had to say about what it means?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think we both feel very honoured and we're both very humble about, you know, what we've been able to achieve and for, you know, people to recognise us for all the hard work that we've done so far in our careers. And, you know, going forward, this is just, you know, this is the end of one chapter and the beginning of a new one.
Hmm. What was the process like? And I'll start with you again, Tim. What was the process like that you went through to finally be selected?
It's sort of you sit down with the judges and you do an interview. Mm-hmm. You sit down, you have a talk. I sat down with Ella Wolf-Tusk, had a talk to her. And it's just
she's not a bad bird, is she?
Yeah, she's good. So we just had a good chat about just the industry, really, sort of your pursuits, where you've been, what you've done, and sort of your knowledge of the industry. So, like, the business side of it, the acumen, I think it's more of a rounded award. It's not just who can get out and cook something. It's the whole package, sort of, the business side of it.
You make a very good point. There's a lot of people that can put food on a plate.
Yeah, they need the customers, and
And Josh, same for you. Who did you talk to?
There was three judges that we sat down with and had a chat. And yeah, I think Tim nailed it. You know, it's all about not just being able to cook, but also, you know, your knowledge of the industry, your passion. You know, being able to run a business and actually deliver food that people want to eat and enjoy.
Mm. The two guys I'm talking to, Joshua Pelham from the Estelle, and Tim. Sorry, I've forgotten your surname.
Martin
from the European. I've got a little bit of dementia today. Don't mind me. Who is your influence? Where did your journey start, Tim? You made a decision to cook. Who influenced you, or who do you look to now in the industry, both here and abroad, as people that you aspire to be like?
Locally, it'd be probably Andrew McDonald.
He does all right, doesn't he?
He's got a good business acumen. He's got a lot of restaurants, so he's sort of he's a good rounded chef. You never see him out there doing the glitzy, the glamour things, or sort of
no chef of the year in the 2015 guide.
Yeah, he's done it a few times, I think, too. So, but it's all well deserved. So, yeah, so he's got seven, I think, very successful restaurants. So,
and each of them remarkably different.
Yes. Good. So, basically, that's the thing. So, someone that's got the roundness, he can cook really well, but he also knows the business side of everything.
And dare we say, because I know he's overseas so he can't hear us, he's actually a really nice bloke.
Yeah, he is.
He's a really good guy. So, Andrew, locally, if we were to look abroad, where does the influence come from?
Well, I don't think the restaurant industry is similar to Australia overboard. I think if I look, I wrote Fabric and Magnus on there as well from Fabric.
I love Magnus Nielsen.
Yeah, Magnus Nielsen. So he's out in the bush in the middle of nowhere. He's doing things like preserving and stuff.
I think it's actually known as the world's most remote restaurant. Mm.
Yeah, it's nowhere. So, but
in 600 kilometres from Stockholm.
But to make a restaurant, 16 people, and to be a success on the world stage that he has is quite impressive, and in the harsh conditions that he works on. So,
and dare I say, again, also a really nice guy.
Yeah. Very
Josh,
young too.
He's
only about our age.
Yeah,
he is. He's not an old guy. Sorry, Tim. I'm going to throw a couple more questions at you. I've got Josh with me for the rest of the hour. Who inspires you to cook? Where did you learn that? And you know, at your mother's apron strings, or was it granny, or did you just do it because you were a naughty kid at school?
When I was younger, there was a lot of cooking shows on TV and stuff. So the old British cooking shows that they had on the pay TV.
Yep.
So it was like I had an interest for cooking and stuff, and was watching those, but I was in country Victoria about an hour and a half outside of Melbourne, so there's not exactly the fine dining restaurant.
Do tell us where?
Nunzio's. I'm from Maui. It was like the Nunzio's.
Good for
like
you. Something good out of Maui. Well done.
Something good, yeah. True.
With no disrespect to Maui, of course.
I moved to Melbourne when I was like 17 or 18. I just wrote a letter to Michael Lambie, who I've seen on a TV show, Kings of the Kitchen.
Yeah.
And it sort of went from there. I worked there with him for about 4 years, so a lot of the skills I have, and I was sort of honed from there, and then obviously took it from there.
Another nice guy, Michael Lambie, and seeing great success at the Smith and Lucy Liu.
Yes.
Mm. So you didn't have anybody in your family, so you watched a bit of telly?
Nobody in my family's done cooking. My sister's boyfriend, back when she was younger, he used to be a chef, so after school when I was like 15, I used to go to his restaurant and just wash dishes and things like that. So that was my first insight.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, it's not a family thing or anything like that.
Excellent. Well, mate, look, continued success. Well done, and congratulations on the award. I hope that it does provide you the platform and the springboard that you want to start to build that roadmap for your future. And we'll keep a very close eye on your work and what you do.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good on you. Thanks, Tim.
All right, bye.
Josh, I think you're sort of sitting there nodding with what Timothy's got to say. Is it a similar sort of thing for you?
Yeah, I agree with, you know, everything that Tim just talked about. You know, as for mentors for me and why I started cooking, I'd started cooking because my brother actually introduced me to the industry. He's a front of house person.
Yep.
And, you know, cooking at a local little restaurant on Toorak Road back in the day called Chichia Bomba, which sadly is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my foot in the door.
Yep.
And then after that,
do your brother and yourself get on really well?
Outside of work, we get on marvelously.
Right.
Inside of work, sometimes we clash. We're like the Rocker Brothers.
Do you actually work together?
No, we don't. We have done.
Right.
Yeah, not like the Rocker Brothers, unfortunately.
Joy 94.9.
On the phone, I have a young fellow also. His name is Nick Stock. He's the chair of judges for a new program called the Vic 100 Wine Awards at Federation Square. Mr. Stock, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you, Pete?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Talk us through what the Vic 100 is, because we've got a couple of double passes to give away to this Wine Awards on the 6th of September. Talk us through what it all means and looks like.
Yeah, well, look, it really is all about that tasting event. So the idea of the competition is that on the back end, it's sort of run like, you know, like a lot of the other wine shows are. There are very good judges, and it's judged under the same sort of conditions. But the thing we're doing a little bit differently with this one is, on the front end, making it all about the sort of, you know, the consumer experience, and really looking to pull together a collection of wines that are showing, you know, not just the quality, but also the amazing diversity that the Victoria can offer, which I think is, you know, a little bit unique.
So it's a celebration of Victorian wine, where people have an opportunity to meet winemakers and all of that, and become. Are they part of the tasting process, or have you already judged those wines?
So the wines were judged this week, and that all happened over a couple of days. And then what we've done is sort of put together a collection of 100 wines.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I guess a normal wine show, you know, people would sort of clamber over the trophies or the gold medal wines or whatnot. And really, this is not what this competition's about. It's really about sort of saying, let's find a, you know, great collection that represents the benchmark styles, in particularly, you know, aimed at the sort of regional kind of benchmarks, the things that Beechworth does best, the Yarra does best, the Mornington does best, and then putting that together in a sort of big tasting situation. So it's a little bit, you know, a little bit different.
And if we were to look to places like the Bellarine, to the Central Ranges and Strathbogie area, to Sunraysia, are all of Victoria's regions taken care of?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I mean, we didn't start with there was no template for the 100 sort of spots. But what we found was that, you know, over the course of the judging, and we did carve everything up so that things were judged, you know, in regional groups, which I think is, you know, is really an important part of the selection process.
Mm.
And just naturally, it was quite cool because we've ended up with a natural kind of representation of what's going on in the regions and, you know, where the sort of benchmarks are coming from. So yeah, as you say, there's a really diverse range of styles. And, you know, there were some really pleasant surprises, actually, which was pretty cool.
That's good. You're the chairman of judges. Who else was on your judging panel?
Yeah, so we had a great panel. We had Philip Rich from the Prince Wine Store.
Yes, not a bad bloke.
Yeah, not too bad. We had Chris Crawford, who's the director of all things beverage now at Crown.
Yeah, he's all right.
Ben Edwards, so, you know, long-standing president of Sommeliers Australia and someone that really, you know, understands wine, you know, inside out.
And had worked very closely with James Halliday on the Wine Companion for a number of years as well, yeah?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Then we had Dan Buckle, and Dan is sort of Dan was really the only winemaker type judge, and I get, that's a bit of a difference to the other wine shows as well. Dan is a winemaker that sort of comes from a background that means he's also really connected to consumers, and I think a lot of the bigger wine shows are really sort of winemaker focused in terms of the way they judge wine. So they're pulling wines that are very sort of technically correct, and often the discussion in those big shows is more about what's wrong with a wine rather than what's right with the wine.
And so correct me if I'm wrong, but where the winemakers do look for technicality perfection in wine, that doesn't always necessarily convert to the consumer's understanding of what they like about the wine. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, it is, Pete. It is, and it's really interesting because I've judged almost every sort of wine show in the country, and so often the days are spent tasting wine and very critically assessing wines, and then there are often dinners at night where all the judges get together and drink wines from all around the world, and often a lot of European wine gets drunk and whatnot. And I've sat there so many times and thought, God, if these wines that everyone's fawning over at night were brought back tomorrow morning and put into the judging, they just,
they might not stack up.
So that's another thing we tried to change. We had Lisa Jenkins from the City Wine Shop, who's a fantastic palate.
Yep.
Really, really, she's an absolute gun.
Yep.
And we had our guest, what I call international judge, who we brought over from South Australia, which is a guy called Dave Brooks.
Oh, he's all right, too.
Keep it honest.
Yeah, he's all right. Nick, correct me if I'm wrong, the winners will be announced on that day?
So we're announcing the winners on Thursday.
On the Thursday?
Yeah, yep. So that's when we sort of announce it. And then Saturday is sort of, is the big sort of tasting. It's the opportunity for everyone to come and sort of, experience everything that's been selected and I guess run the ruler over the whole thing and keep the judges honest, which
Correct.
Is another good thing.
What was the biggest surprise for you?
The biggest surprise, that's really interesting. I think the biggest sort of surprise was when we got to the end and we sort of looked at the top wines on the table, and I really didn't know what was going to sort of fall out, and just to see that there were such world class, and I don't want to start tossing superlatives around, but really absolutely amazing wines across such a range of styles. And I think that's the same, all the judges tasted those wines at the very end. It was the last thing we did, and we all sort of stood back and just, everyone was sort of taking a deep breath and saying, it really is incredible to see that, the Victoria can deliver not just a great Chardonnay from the Yarra, not just a great Pinot from the Mornington, et cetera, but really can just tap such a big range of styles so well.
Excellent. And my final question, I'm assuming that this has also covered larger producers and smaller producers?
Yeah, so we there's no there's no sort of you must be this kind of producer or that kind of producer, and we had everyone from Treasury, who are one of the biggest wine producers in the country entering wines, down to little wineries that are brand new, one man bands, mothers and fathers, everybody was sort of there and welcome, and the other good thing was that we saw we saw the big companies and those big sort of producers with a lot of resources do really, really well.
Yep.
And we also saw, people that were just, doing something very modest in terms of their scale of production do equally as well.
Excellent. Mate, thanks for joining me. Good luck with the announcements on the Thursday and also the big nosh up next Saturday on the 6th of September. Really grateful for your time.
Can't wait. Thanks,
Pete. Cheers. Thanks, Nick. That is Nick Stock. He is one of Australia's most eminent wine writers, and he is also not a bad bloke. He is the head of judges for the Vic 100 Wine Awards. I actually know this these events really, really well. I think what it does is it allows consumers, punters, to actually go and talk to producers who are making some really fine sort of artisanal and handcrafted produce.
Boutique stuff,
yeah,
as well,
absolutely.
Smaller producers.
Yeah, and look at what the smaller producers are doing. Actually meet the producers and talk to them, have a discussion. And I think, we talk a lot on this program in particular about provenance and knowing where our food comes from and knowing who's making it. And I think events like this, which is sort of quite rare apart from farmers markets, and it's not a farmers market, give people an opportunity to actually create a bit of a relationship with a producer, and I think it's a remarkable thing.
Joy 94.9.
Josh, back to you. Where do you like to eat when you're not at work?
I love cooking at home.
Do you?
Honestly. I love cooking at home.
Oh, I need you to talk to my partner who's also a chef.
Yeah.
Hates cooking at home.
No, I love to cook at home. And we often just do simple things. I'll go to the markets and pick up some veggies and either some sort of fish or meat protein. Yep. And I'll do a nice simple kithiraki or orzo pasta. Mm-hmm. My girlfriend loves bolognese. I don't know what it is. But bolognese
everybody
and bechamel.
Everybody loves bolognese.
It. I don't get it. I don't like it's lovely, but it wouldn't be my pick, that's for sure.
What would be your pick? If you were to, you know, it's your final, you know that tomorrow the world's going to end and you get today to sit down to whatever you want to eat. What is that? What's your final
On a day like today, it would have to be a tuna salad. I'm pretty easily pleased.
Oh, a simple taste.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. The simplest things, especially, you know, with the food that we produce at the Estelle, you know, sometimes you just need to pare it back and enjoy, you know, the simpler things in life because, you know, there's a lot of work and effort that goes into the dishes that we produce.
Your farewell buffet. What's coming up at the Estelle? What can people look forward to over the next little while from the Young Chef of the year?
I mean,
sorry, I'm
thank
get,
you. I'm still getting used
I'm gonna
to
get
it.
You a t-shirt that says that.
Look, we've got seasonal lunches coming up, so through spring, straight off the bat,
which starts in a couple of days.
Father's Day, we are doing another roast event. So every Sunday, we're doing a roast, different roast every week, and it's a great opportunity for the family to come down and just enjoy a lovely ambience of our back area that's just recently been enclosed.
Yep.
And also it's surrounded by edible plants and things like that.
Excellent. And you then don't have to do the washing up because you've got people in your kitchen
exactly,
to do that.
Exactly. Also, we're promoting the Young Chef of the Year.
Young Chefs of the Year. So this is yourself, Tim, your co-winner.
Exactly.
And a number of the other finalists.
And we just thought it'd be great to get together and everyone cooks together.
Do you take on a course or is somebody responsible for menu planning?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I've taken on the reins of sort of organising the event.
Yep. So you do a main course?
Yeah, I'm doing main
your
course.
Your venue,
yeah.
You choose.
You know the rules.
Yep, indeed.
And, you know, it's about the, you know, young chefs coming together and just producing some food that, you know, they really enjoy cooking and
they may not be able to produce where they work.
Exactly, exactly. Freedom of expression. And that's on the 4th of November.
Yep.
So Cup Day, inspired by spring, obviously, and also the spring carnival.
Are you going to have a telly there and a bookie for people
absolutely.
To have a punt?
Yeah, yeah. Scotty will be there taking bets.
Scotty will be your bookie, absolutely. For those that don't know, Scotty Pickett, who is from the Estelle and also from St. Crispin, which has just celebrated its first year. And two hats in the Age Good Food Guide.
Yeah, amazing achievement by the guys down there.
It is for he and Joe Grabak, both really good guys and a fine restaurant as well.
Absolutely. Mm. You know, just kicking goal after goal. And, you know, I'm sure most of Melbourne has dined there. And if you haven't, you must get down
in.
There.
And what I like about it is you're sort of not going with any surprises. You know you're paying X amount of dollars to go and have a number of courses. The only expense outside of knowing what that set price is some wine.
Exactly, exactly.
They can wine match for you, make it simple.
And even if you just want to go check it out and have a snack upstairs, Tommy Oliver.
Yes.
So, yeah, fantastic.
It's a nice space to be in as well.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant.
What do you think this is, whilst you're still getting used to your new title, Young Chef of the Year 2015. What do you think it might do for you? And you know, do you look at it practically and say, okay, well, it's giving my peers a little more recognition of who I am, or do you think it's you know, you're going to become a celebrity chef of it?
But for me, it's always been a goal of mine to sort of achieve this recognition, you know, ever since I started cooking at Academy Sofitel, I would see trophies with George Colombaris's name on it. And, you know, that's something
that I aspire to. A lot of those around Melbourne.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that I wanted to aspire to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this recognition from the Age, you know, has just been a massive tick on one of my goals that I wanted to achieve in my career. You know, and now it's just onwards and upwards.
So what's the next award on your list?
Chef of the Year, but I think I've got about another 10 years to go.
Yeah, move over, Andrew McConnell. You've finally got a challenge. He has done exceptionally well, Andrew, and we applaud his work. He's also a very good guy. So, Spring Carnival, Melbourne Cup Day, sorry. You're doing your event. You've got stuff on Father's Day with a roast for Dad. And
yeah, and that's every Sunday.
Yes.
Following almost up until Christmas, you know, rotating through different proteins. You know, Father's Day has to be roast beef.
Why does it have to be roast beef? I would have roast chicken.
Would you have roast chicken?
Yeah.
Well, I thought the general population would be roast beef.
Oh, it's a chook for me.
Is it?
It's my favourite roast.
Well, lucky we've got chicken on the menu.
Yeah, my favourite roast.
You have the option of taking the roast, or you can go a la carte.
I was watching an ad on television the other day, and I won't mention who it's for, but this perfectly roasted chicken on this ad, and I sat there on the sofa, and I salivated, and I was like, well, there's something very wrong about salivating over an ad on the television. I love roast chicken.
Well, you know, pop down and we'll cook you up some chook.
Excellent. Yeah, roast chicken. So what else is coming up?
Well, if you want to come down on the 14th, we're doing chicken. So that would be great for the seasonal menus. Straight after that, lamb, and then we're doing salmon, which is...
Yum, I love roast salmon.
So we're sort of playing with ideas whether it's roast it whole, salt baked, or, you know, just do lovely cutlets of the tail. Just, you know, still playing around with ideas and fine-tuning it.
Excellent. If people would like to know more, they can go to...
theestelle.com.au.
It's that simple. Josh, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on your award. I think it's richly deserved. And as I said to Tim, we'll also watch your journey over the next little while and see where it takes you. Do you know what it, you know, a job interview, where do you want to be in 5 years?
Look, you know, the future, obviously, you know, this is, I'm still settling down, hasn't even been a week yet.
Yeah.
And just, you know, coming to grips with, you know, what's happened and the journey, you know, the way that it's going to play out. Obviously, you know, with Scott Pickett and myself cooking together, you know, he's a fantastic person to work for. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that the plans for next year are going to be pretty big.
Excellent. So you have plans already?
Yes.
I reckon I already know what you're going to do. I might have it in the back of my mind. Is a restaurant on the cards for you?
One day.
One day?
Yeah, one day. Not straight away. You know, still young chef of the year.
Yes.
I'm still young and need to learn the ropes.
A business with your brother? Would you do it?
Yeah, why not?
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to find the right backer.
Well, yeah, you do. I'm fresh out of cash at the minute, but... I won $15 in the Powerball, so I'll give you that to get started. Have you thought now, and this is quite a strange idea, but a possible campaign?
I haven't, no. I have not.
It's being done for everything.
Really?
Why not do it to open a restaurant where the people that invest money are, you know, you can have hundreds and hundreds of tiny investors who believe in you.
That's a lot of emails to answer.
It is, but I'm sure we can manage it. That's Joshua Pelham. He is at the Estelle in Northcote. Do go in and check it out. It's a very fine establishment for very honest food with great integrity. This has been Cravings. I will be back next week at the beginning of spring, and oddly enough, we probably will be focused a little on spring and the joys of spring in what it means for produce and all of those lovely things. Until next Saturday, I've been Pete Dillon. This has been Cravings. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.